This episode was recorded in May 2020. If you enjoy this podcast, then subscribe to catch all future episodes.
How are you? How are you, Rob?
I'm just sickity boo, man. Sickity boo.
Where are you?
I'm in Tampa, Florida.
Weather good?
80 degrees, not a cloud in the sky.
Lockdown, how is it over there?
We have a pug. I've got a pool, so I can go outside in the garden and play with the dog and all that sort of stuff. But not going to restaurants or bars is a bit of a pisser.
Yeah. What in general? Are people observing it? Is everybody got the masks on, or what's it like?
Well, Florida is a little bit different than everybody else because it's it's an aged community, Rob. You know, like most people in South Florida are in their 60s. So they're not all jumping up and down. They're just taking it, steady. So it's all good. It's all good.
I'm glad you're lowering the age.
Well, exactly.
Listen, I've been looking at this thing's called the Old Footballers Club. So naturally, it was Ian Condren who suggested straight away go for you.
Oh, lovely!
And your ears were probably burning because I spoke to Jeff Stelling yesterday.
Didn't Condo retire or something?
He has retired. Retired's the word. Yeah, he's enjoying his. He's 60 coming up, actually.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, I was looking at your football career.
Hang on. Slow down. We've got to do the background to all this. Who is Sean Downes?
Sean Downes is the producer of this. What do you call it? Zoom cast.
Okay, and Sean's on right now, but he's on mute.
Sean's on mute. He's recording this.
Excellent. Okay, good. Good to know.
Got that one? Okay. It's called the old Footballers Club.
Thank you.
I was Wikipedia-ing you this morning and today and didn't realise what an unbelievable career. I know it sounds a bit glib, but an unbelievable career you had. I just wonder if people recognise you more for your media career than your football career these days.
Yeah. Interesting, as you and I worked together for about 3 years on you're on Sky Sports phone show, so you should have done a bit of research.
I know. I feel guilty I didn't do it before, to be honest with you.
I can ask you a question because it depends on what age group you're looking at. If you're looking at people in their 50s, 60s and 50s and around there, they remember me as a player. Once you get down to 20, 25, 30, know of you, seen the videos, you played with George Best and Bobby Moore, blah, 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 but we don't remember you live. So there's kind of a double-edged sword there.
Do you watch much of the footage on YouTube and things like that from the QPR Fulham days?
No, unless somebody sends me something on Twitter. Every so often somebody will say, Rodney, I saw this hat trick on Twitter the other day, have you seen it? Which is the one they talk about is the QPR against Birmingham at Queen's Park Rangers back in the day when Brian Moore was the commentator.
Brilliant.
And I have to say, yes, I've seen that 1.6 million times now.
how good was Johnny Haynes?
Well, now, I've got to be very careful I've got to be very careful because I don't want to disparage anybody, okay?
That's a first, yeah.
But as you know, I just tell football, when it comes to football, I tell it like it is, right? Johnny Haynes was a Glenn Hoddle, but with more talent. And what I mean by that, Robbie, I'm Glenn Hoddle's one of Glenn Hoddle's biggest fans. Magnificent player. Some of the younger viewers will know about Glenn Hoddle, but maybe not Johnny Haynes. Johnny Haynes could pass the ball like Glenn Hoddle over longer distances with both feet. Plus, he scored goals. Plus, he captained England. And he was only playing for Fulham. He wasn't playing for a great team like Spurs were when Ben Hodder was playing for him. So overall, I would say that Johnny Haynes, fantastic player. He's got his statue outside Craven Cottage, right out the front of Craven Cottage, and deservedly so. Mine's actually in the toilet. It's going to be there next year. But but Johnny Haynes, one of the greatest players that ever played the game.
What kind of role did you have? Were you sort of out and out centre forward with him playing off you kind of thing, or how did it work?
Great question that is, Robbie. That's a great question, because when I first started playing football, I was like a young Johnny Haynes type player. So, but I scored more goals. Now that's not bumming myself up. That's not bigging myself up. As a youth player, I scored more goals, but played the similar role. So lovely little story. I've got to tell you a lovely little story. I've just turned 18. I'm in Fulham's youth team in the under 18s at Fulham. I scored 51 goals in the first season I'm there. So I'm the golden boy of the youth team. And Johnny Haynes gets injured on a Wednesday night playing for, I think it was England against Russia at Wembley. And he gets injured. Manager calls me in on the Friday morning. He said, Rodney, he said, Johnny is not going to be fit for Saturday. He said, and I want you to wear the number 10 shirt. You know, the reserve team, I'm going, bypassing the reserves, I'm going straight to the youth team, and I'm taking you out of the youth team. And I was stunned. I was gobsmacked. I never thought I'd this quick. So I go from youth team, great goal scorer, Johnny Haynes lookalike type player, into the first team. Aston Villa at home, 61 minutes, ball comes over to me at the far post, control it on my thigh, smashed it 25 yards, top corner, 1-0, we win 1-0. And I just go absolutely ballistic. And we come off the field, Alan Mullery and Jules Cohen and all the old Kevin, Rodney. I picked up the paper on the Sunday morning to look at all the things, right? And the headline was, I'll never ever forget it, Marsh's day, but now he's back in the shadows. because Johnny Haynes was fit for the next week.
Hey, who crossed the ball for you for the goal?
Jules Cohen.
Amazing, hey.
Remember it well. It's documented somewhere. Boy, you go back and check it out. I was 18 years old, so it must have been 1963, somewhere around there. 1-0 Aston Villa, 61st minute, bang, top of the net.
Listen, not only Johnny Haynes, because I interviewed Clive Allen the other day. I know who you worked with, obviously. But your striking partner with QPR, certainly to begin with, was Les Allen, his dad.
Well, that's right. Les Allen, I've always said this, by the way, Les Allen was one of the most intelligent footballers I ever played with. And I played with some great, great footballers. Yeah. And Les Allen was a highly intelligent player, understood weight of pass, when to pass the ball, where to hold it, when to get running behind a defender, when to come short. Les Allen, Rob, was one of the most underrated footballers that ever played football, in my opinion.
Uh-huh. We were laughing with Jeff the other day, talking about dopey defenders, because you did kind of persecute poor Frank.
I still do.
For years on end. Which of the dopey defenders gave you most problems?
Well, there was a lot of them. I would say that I didn't mind playing against the good players. I didn't mind playing against Beckenbauer or Bobby Moore or the truly great footballer defenders. I hated playing against the thugs. I hated playing against Tommy Smith of Liverpool, Chopper Harris of Chelsea, because they couldn't play, but could they kick you? And there was a few of those. One player that I absolutely respected for being a kicker, and well, it's two of them, a kicker and a player, was Norman Hunter, who recently died, you know, God rest his soul. And Dave McKay, the old Scottish Spurs captain, was a magnificent defender, and he could also play, yeah.
But you must have had to look after yourself, Rodney. I mean, it's all right them saying, you know, they did have a free one then, didn't they? It was a different game, completely.
It was. It was a different attitude to the game as well. As the game has evolved, Rob, and I watched today's football and I watched some of the defenders today that can really come out the back with a ball and knock the ball into midfield and play. I watched Virgil van Dijk, who's got to be the greatest defender in the world, and I just love watching him play. And I actually dropped him a line on Twitter to say, I really respect the way that you play, son, and the way that you get the ball and you never get caught in possession. And he said, piss off. So...
if you had one spell as a player in England, what was it? Which was the one you enjoyed more than any other?
Well, I had going behind the curtain. I had great periods of each of the clubs I played, even with the Tampa Bay Rowdies when I came to America.
I'll talk about America in a minute. I'm really fascinated about.
Absolutely, yeah. I had great periods during my time. Man City, I had some magnificent periods of you know, maybe 10 or 15, 20 games, and then it would, you know. But if I was to say one period completely out of the whole thing, I played for 19 years, but I would say that the year we had with Queen's Park Rangers, when as a third division team, we won the League Cup and won the Championship. We scored over 100 goals, got over 100 points, and we just blew everybody away. And I tell you what, Rob, there's times in football, and if you ask all footballers, they'll tell you this, at least the talented ones will. Sometimes you play football and you don't actually know why you've been so good. You'll go through a purple patch and you'll hit a shot and it'll go in, and then you'll try a trick and it'll come off. Well, I had that for about a year with Queen's Park Rangers, where I couldn't do any wrong. Everything I tried went in. I scored 44 goals in a season. Everything that I did came off. And one day, we played after the League Cup final. We already won the League Cup final. We were playing in the league, and we played, I can't remember who it was, a home game. And I was absolutely sensational. And when I say that, I say it with all modesty. And I made a couple of goals and scored a couple of goals. And after the game, a reporter, and I think it might have been Jeff Powell, but don't quote me on that. In the press room afterwards, Bill Nicholson was there, the Spurs manager. And he said to him, he said, you know, Mr. Nicholson, you know, who are you looking at the game tonight? Did you come to look at a player to sign for Spurs? And he said, and I'm going to paraphrase his quote, he said, I'm not here to sign players. I just love watching Rodney Marsh play. And I thought...
Well, to be fair to you, I read today that was very much in the offing, that perhaps even more than that, that Spurs were looking to sign you at that time.
That's right. It ended up, but this wasn't the time. It ended up being a little bit later that they did come in for me and Roger Morgan. Yeah,
both of us. Yeah.
Manchester City. Let's talk about the managers. What was Big Mal like?
Well, Big Malcolm was. How can I put this? He would be the Dostoevsky of football. Fyodor Dostoevsky, obviously the Crime and Punishment writer, that was straddled his life between genius and fool. Malcolm was that. Malcolm could be a genius, and then he'd try a system that he played one game. Now listen to this. You're going to think out there in radio land, you're going to think I'm making, or TV land or podcast land, you think I'm going to make this up. One game Malcolm played without a midfield. He played a game. He had five defenders, five forwards, and no midfield. And at half-time, he went, fuck this, I've got this wrong. So that was Malcolm. That was Malcolm.
Brilliant. Were you a party boy? You get that image of the maverick, obviously, but were you a party person?
I was to a degree, Rob, but all of the rhetoric and all the stories about those days, in my case, were highly, highly overrated. I was more of a younger player, especially as a younger player, I was more of a reader and an artist. I loved to paint, I loved to draw. And I didn't go out till 5 in the morning gambling and all that sort of stuff and drinking till early hours. I didn't do a lot of that until, you know, and then as you get more of a pro, you join in with the rest of the lads and you end up being like Carl Walker. So, yeah, a little bit.
Is it true Elton John took you on his plane that he was going to go to Los Angeles? I couldn't follow that. It was like, yeah, Elton John took Rodney on his plane and then he ended up at Tampa Bay Rowdies. What was all that about?
Well, it's a decent story. I was captain of Man City, playing fantastically well. We'd just beaten Arsenal 3-2 at Highbury. And I scored the winning goal. 1975-ish. That's on YouTube as well, folks, if you want to see the diving header. A week later, I got into a massive row with Tony Book, the manager, Ian McFarlane, the coach, and Peter Swales, the chairman. It was kind of 3-1, and I didn't like those odds. I walked back down, and they put me on the transfer list. So, and I'm captain of Man City, and they just put me on the transfer list and shut me out of the club completely. And I just trained with the youth players and all that sort of stuff. And I'd had a few offers to go to Anderlecht and Crystal Palace and Aston Villa. Newcastle came in for me and all that. I didn't really fancy that. And suddenly one day I got a phone call. And the guy said, Rodney Marchia, he said, I'm Elton John's agent. And I said, oh, yeah. He said, Elton's been reading about you and your troubles at Man City. He said, he's going to buy the Los Angeles Aztecs in California. He said, and he wants to sign you and George Best. And I said, what? He said, yeah. He said, and I thought it was all bollocks. So yeah. I thought it was a prank, like a prank call. And he said, I said, well, you know, he said, Elton John's going to fly you over on his private jet with a lot of other people. They're going to go for his concert in Dodger Stadium, Los Angeles. All expenses paid, and he wants to talk to you in Los Angeles. I said, that'll do for me, pal. I mean, so we jumped on the plane, and there's all these singers and movie actors and actors and actresses and directors, and I'm in there having a cup of tea and all that. We get to L.A., and meet Elton John, and we sit down, and George has already been there, and he's done everything. And he says, Rodney, he said, I wanted to say, okay. I said, before I do anything, Elton, I said, could I just think it all through? Because it's come a little bit sudden. While I'm in bed about 12 o'clock at night, the phone rings and the guy said, Rodney, he said, this is Bold Clear Rogers IV. So I said, oh, hello. He said, you're in America to sign for LA, aren't you? I said, well, I'm talking to him. He said, before you sign, he said, please come down to Tampa Bay because we'd love to have you down here. And I said, where the fuck is Tampa Bay? And he went, well, we'll send you a ticket for you and your my island agent at the time. His name was Ken Adam. Lovely, lovely. I still know him to this day. We both fly down. And I tell you what, Robbie, I tell you what, the first time my foot was off the plane, onto the into the airport at Tampa, in my heart, I just knew that that's where I wanted to be. I can't explain it. I don't understand it. But that's where I wanted to be. And I signed for Tampa Bay within about 3 weeks later. I signed for Tampa Bay and left England and come to Tampa Bay Rowdies.
I mean, it's been a wonderful relationship and still obviously continues. Who were the players there? Who was the manager? What was it like playing for Tampa Bay Rowdies, having graced the first division with Manchester City?
Well, the manager was a guy called Eddie Fermani. And I'm glad we're doing this on Zoom, on video, because I can show you. So Eddie Fermani picks me up at the airport in this magnificent Lincoln Continental. I mean, it was just beautiful. Midnight blue, white seats, and it was like a fluffy Dyson in the window. It was just a beautiful, beautiful car. He picks me up, and as we're driving to the hotel, he's talking about this and talking about that, and I'd love to have you come here. You know, Eddie Fermani, I played for Charlton Athletic, blah, 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 blah. And as he's driving the car, I noticed, Rob, that he had, this was like his thumb. He had no thumb because it was... So I said, what happened to your thumb? And he said, after I was here for a couple of weeks, he said, okay, he'd only been there a year himself. He said, after a couple of weeks, he said, I went water skiing. He said, and I wrapped the cord around my hand. And as the boat shot off, it took me up with it. So I said, well, how'd you get a lift then? He didn't like that too much, Eddie.
Your goal scoring record, it was, yeah. I've got here. It's probably only, I guess, I don't know about cup games, 48 goals in 94 appearances.
Yeah, yeah. That was great. I'm just kidding.
There must have been other guys from the leagues there as well. Who are you crossing over with?
Oh my goodness. The first 18 months I was there, obviously Pelé was already there with New York Cosmos. First 18 months I was there, Johan Cruyff signed, he ended up signing for Los Angeles. Bobby Moore came over, Franz Beckenbauer, Carlos Alberto, Eusebio, Bobby Moore, Gerd Müller from the World Cup Germany. I mean, it was like a who's who of world stars. And we Tampa Bay Rowdies were like the Dirty Dozen, the ugly ducklings of it, and I loved it.
You ended up managing. You managed in New York. You ended up managing at the Rowdies. Yeah. I mean, that's something I don't think people realise. What were you like as a manager?
Oh, it was absolute shit. I mean, I would hold my hands up on that one. I signed for New York first of all, and I did 6 months there. I didn't like it. I went to Charlotte, and the first year we actually incredibly nothing to do with me. We won the championship of American Soccer League in the first year. That's documented somewhere. That was 1981. Charlotte, yeah. Carolina Lightning, the name of the team was. We won the championship. And then after that, it went all downhill because I was talking to the players like they could play. And because I've been with Colin Bell and Mike Summerby and Bobby Moore and all these great, great players, I didn't have the ability. It was all on me. I didn't have the ability to adjust to the level that I was trying to coach at. And I ended up being a coach for about 4 years. Massive, apart from the championship in the first year, massive failure. And then I went on to become a general manager, which I was very good at.
I've got to ask you about George. Obviously, Jeff and I were chatting about him. The original Soccer Saturday panel, yourself, yeah. And George and Frank and Clive Allen, possibly. You had 3 years on a sort of on the road with him, didn't you? You were doing the sort of the George and Rodney road show. You ended up tackling each other at Fulham. Come on, tell us about George. Give me a George.
Oh, I tell you what. Every time I speak to people around the world, they all ask about George Best, because quite rightly so. George Best was one of the greatest footballers that ever played. And for a short period of time, Robbie, I would say 60, 67, 68, 69, around that time, George Best was the best player in the world. He was unstoppable, unmarkable. And no matter what you tried to do, he would be better. And he was just a genius. Smashing bloke. We got on fantastically well as people. We did the Best of Marsh Road shows, for, as you say, for a couple of years there, which was incredibly funny. And I always use the story. I love to tell a little story. When we first came back from America, Bobby Moore was in Houston, San Antonio, I think it was. George was in San Jose. I think George was in San, and I was in Tampa. And we all came back to Fulham. So the chairman was a guy called Ernie Clay, who was all about money. And he'd arranged a friendly game in Norway after George and I and Bobby had got back. So we go to this friendly game, because obviously to make up the money, he's got to pay for George Best. So we play this friendly game and we win the game and the fans are going mad, a big crowd to watch George Best and blah, blah, blah. And afterwards we go out and we have a few drinks and something to eat, and then we go to a bit of a club in Norway and we have a great night. It's a fantastic night, and it was laughing and joking, and all the boys. I left it early. I left about midnight, 12:30. George is still there. So he's had this reputation. He had this reputation of letting people down and not showing up and always being trouble. That was complete nonsense. They said about he loves gambling, he loves women, and he loves drinking and all that. And that's all true. But he tried, Robbie, to be responsible. So he's walking back to the hotel. He's walking through the streets, and he gets close to the hotel, and he's thinking, I can't miss the flight. I can't let the lads down. I've got to get the flight. And he gets into the hotel, and he eventually finds it. And he says to the night porter, it's so funny. He said to the night porter, I can't miss the flight. So I've got to have a wake-up call. Don't let me down. I have to have the call. And the guy said, certainly, Mr. Best. He said, what time would you like it for? He said, you better make it 7:30. He said, it's 20 to 8 now. And I think that kind of sums up Bestie, yeah.
Brilliant. Soccer Saturday was glory days. You must have thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was fantastic. It was a fantastic concept by Andrew Hornet, was the original producer back in the day. Buzz, his nickname was Buzz. I got on sensationally with him early on. He had the idea of watching games on the tube all together and comments. Everybody was mad. But it just worked. And what it was, Robbie, the reason that it worked, in my opinion, I don't know what the producers and executives said or still say, but the reason it worked was it was organic. Nobody tried to say things, and nobody had things written down. I've got to talk about this, or I've got to make that crack, or... It was just completely organic. And Bestie came out with as we all did, some of them. And it was just really, really fun. It was a fun time. I was 11 years. For the first 4 or 5 years, it was just brilliant. And then it went a little bit, it got a little bit old. As you know, things get, that's life. And of course, eventually I got sacked after 11 years, being at Sky for 11 years. But when it first started, the original Soccer Saturday with Jeff Stelling, where Jeff was just incredible. I've never worked with a better pro in my life as a host.
He said yesterday, he said, I used to talk to Rodney and Rodney knew what I was going to say. But the thing is, I knew what Rodney was going to say. And then by that time, he knew what I was going to say back to him.
It was brilliant. I wouldn't quite put it that way, although I see where he's coming from. It was more like we had a telepathy where he would kind of look at me and I knew he was going to come to me. It was there's four on the panel. And I always had the sense that he was coming to me. So I was prepared to go straight back at him. Yeah. Very funny days. Very, very funny days.
Listen, what are you up to now in the States? What are you up to?
Well, I've got my own radio show. I had it for 6 years. It's on Sirius XM, who's the number one satellite in the world. For those people that don't know, they're out in radio land. Sirius XM have got 37.5 million subscribers. 37.5 million subscribers, Rob. They do all sports. They do it's a satellite station. They do everything. They do entertainment. They do music. They do politics. They've got everything covered in America. And I have my little Grumpy Pundits radio show every morning.
Brilliant. Listen, Rodney, all I got to say is thanks so much for joining us. It's lovely to see you. I've just loved it. I've really enjoyed it. And hopefully I'll see you over here very soon.
Robbie, give my love to everybody, will you, mate?
I will do, Ronnie. Take care, my friend. All the very best to you.